The second of the two sections of six chapters, the second of the six chapter sections of the Bhagavad Gita leading us to chapter 12 have been completed. The second section was about devotional service specifically. And specifically, as we heard, it discussed Krishna's position, his opulences, the way to achieve him, the glory of devotional service. And in this way, we heard directly about Krishna, only about Krishna. Now, in this third group of three chapters, of six chapters, we're going to hear the emphasis is going to change again. The first six chapters were more about karma, or action, and ultimately action on the platform of knowledge. And what was that knowledge? Ultimately, it was bhakti yoga. But it was basically karma. And this third group of six is going to have lots to do with jnana, or knowledge. So the middle section is bhakti. The first section is karma, the perfection of karma ultimately being bhakti. And the third section is jnana. And the perfection of jnana is ultimately bhakti as well. And practically speaking, without bhakti, which is right in the middle of karma being the first section and jnana being the third or final section, without bhakti, these other two processes are practically speaking useless. So therefore bhakti is included in the middle. So we get that point. Now, in the 12th chapter itself, Krishna has promised in 12.7 that he will redeem his devotees. Mrityu samsara vatmani. He will come personally and take care of his devotees. Now Krishna is going to give in 13 the knowledge that's needed for the devotee to be elevated beyond the material world. And chapter 13 begins with Arjuna asking six questions. Arjuna said, "O my dear Krishna," and you can refer to your books, "O my dear Krishna, I wish to know about Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer, Kshetra, the field and the knower of the field, Kshetra and Kshetragya, should know these terms, Kshetra, or if you're Bengali, Kshetra and Kshetragya, the field of activities and the knower of the field, and of knowledge and the object of knowledge." Six different questions. Prakriti, Purusha. What is Prakriti? What is Purusha? What is Kshetra and Kshetragya? The field and the knower of the field. And and what is knowledge? And what is the object of knowledge? And Krishna answers all these questions. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "This body, O son of Kunti, is called the field. And one who knows this body is called the knower of the field." Now, why is the body called the field? Because just if one has a field, one plants different seeds in that field. And what is the fruit that one gets according to what he plants? So similarly, the person, the soul, he has a field which is basically this body. And we'll hear more about the field later. And the happiness and distress that he will reap from his field are the happiness and distresses that he is actually getting from his activities in the body, or carried. The body is the field in which his happinesses and distresses are reaped. So therefore, the body is called the field of activity, and the planter, or the doer, or the soul, is called the knower of the field. One who knows this body is called the knower of the field. Now, in text 3, 4, and 5, Krishna is going to answer questions, in 2 through 7, Krishna answers 3, 4, and 5, those questions of Arjuna's. What is Kshetra? What is Kshetragya? And he answers part of his answer about what is knowledge, Jnanam. Jnanam means knowledge, and Gayam means the object of knowledge. So he's going to answer what is knowledge too. So in 2 through 7, the second section, he answers what is Kshetra, what is Kshetragya, and he partially answers what is knowledge. Purport. In the first 6 chapters, this is the last paragraph, of Bhagavad Gita, the knower of the body, the living entity, and the position by which he can understand the Supreme Lord are described. In the middle 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the relationship between the individual soul and the super soul in regard to devotional service are described. The superior position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the subordinate position of the individual souls are definitely defined in these chapters. The living entities are subordinate under all circumstances, but in their forgetfulness, they are suffering. When enlightened by pious activities, they approach the Supreme Lord in different capacities, as the distressed, those in want of money, the inquisitive, and those in search of knowledge. That is also described. What chapter was that described? Nope. 7, right. Now, starting with the 13th chapter, how the living entity comes into contact with material nature and how he is delivered by the Supreme Lord through the different methods of fruitive activities, cultivation of knowledge, and the discharge of devotional service are explained. Although the living entity is completely different from the material body, he somehow becomes related. This is also explained. So the nature of the spirit soul's entanglement in the material world with his material body is the subject of this chapter. This is jnana. That's not quite, but this is knowledge. This is what we mean by knowledge. That the nature, who is the living entity, his difference, that he's different from the material body, the process of getting out, and who is the object of knowledge, who is the object of his worship. All these things will be described in this chapter. So first, in two, Krishna has said that the body is the field. That's the answer to one question, very briefly. Second, one who knows this body is called the knower of the field. That's Kshetra and Kshetragya, the knower of the field. This is the soul. Then, O son of Bharata, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. And to understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. So 3 questions have been answered. The first one, what is Kshetra? What is the field of activities? And the answer is the body. What number is that?
3.
That's 3. Immediately, Krishna is answering this, immediately and quickly. Then, what is Kshetragya? That is, one kind is the soul, and then the other kind is the super soul. And what is the difference between the soul and the super soul? That's Kshetragya?
The soul.
Okay, yep, very good student. The super soul knows all bodies, all fields. He is like the king who knows what's going on in everyone's field. But the soul only knows what's going on in his own field, his own body. But the super soul knows everyone's field of activities. And then the 5th question, it is, what is jnanam? What is knowledge? And the answer that, to know the difference between the body and the soul, that's knowledge. The body, the soul, and especially to know the super soul. To know these 3 in perspective is actually knowledge. We've actually already come in contact with this point in chapter 5, which was more a jnana type of chapter, where we understood that the difference, and on our test, not everyone got this point right. The thing that gives one liberation, this The aspect of knowledge that gives one liberation is when the soul knows the super soul. When his knowledge increases to the point that he knows the super soul, he's liberated. When he just knows that he's not his body, then he's enlightened. But liberation, in other words, he's fully fixed, knowing he's not his body, but that's not enough. That's jnana, that's from the mode of goodness. But to actually bring one to the Brahma-Buddha stage, one needs knowledge of the super soul, the supreme. Any questions so far? Because this will continue. So to understand the body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. And then, okay. I'm also the knower in all bodies. Understand this body and its knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. Also, the living entity, he knows only his body and he knows it imperfectly. And the super soul knows all bodies and he knows them perfectly. Purport. This is just about halfway through. Perfect knowledge of the constitution of the body, the constitution of the individual soul, and the constitution of the super soul is known in terms of Vedic literature as jnana. That is the opinion of Krishna. To understand both the soul and the super soul as one, yet distinct, is knowledge. One who does not understand the field of activity and the knower or activity is not in perfect knowledge. One has to understand the position of Prakriti, nature, Purusha, the enjoyer of nature, and Ishwara, the knower who dominates or controls nature, and the individual soul. One should not confuse the three in their different capacities. So Prabhupada here, in the purport, is actually also giving the answers to one and two questions, one and two. Because he's saying that what is Prakriti and what is Purusha? And he's explaining two kinds of Purushas, or another way to look at it, and we'll explain it more clearly later, two kinds of Prakritis in one kind of Purusha, or two kinds of Purushas in one kind of Prakriti. We'll explain that a little later. So the fifth question was, what is knowledge? And that is to know the soul, the super soul, and the body. But one more S. So it's the soul, the super soul, and the body. In the proper perspective. That is jnanam. Now Krishna's going to explain more about that over here. Now please hear, in text 4, my brief description of the field of activity and how it is constituted, what its changes are, whence it is produced, who the knower of the field of activities is, and what his influences are. So there are five different points that Krishna makes here, and they are actually described in the remaining verses of this chapter. So although Krishna answers the six questions of Arjuna in the remaining verses of this chapter, he also explains all these points in relationship to the field of activities. Now, the next point in text 5, in text 4, Krishna said, now hear my brief description. So Krishna's going to, he's just summarized something very, very quickly. Now, the rest of the chapter is going to be a brief description of these five points. But now in text 5, he explains where these points are expanded for further study in case one wants to know more than just the brief description that Krishna is now going to give. So he says that knowledge of the field of activities and of the knower of activities is described by various sages in various Vedic writings. It is especially presented in Vedanta Sutra with all reasonings as to cause and effect. So there are two authorities Krishna has given. As he said in text 3, this is my opinion. As if Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead's opinion, wasn't sufficient, he quotes two different types of authorities, sadhu and shastra. And he himself is taking the role of guru. So he says the sages have described this in various Vedic writings. So the words are sages such as, there's different rishis, such as Vyasadeva and Parasara, and the different Vedic writings, the different chandas of the Vedas, the different sections of the Vedas have described this. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the highest authority in explaining this knowledge. Still, as a matter of course, learned scholars and standard authorities always give evidence from previous authorities. Krishna's explaining this most controversial point regarding the duality and non-duality of the soul and the supersoul by referring to a scripture, the Vedanta, which is accepted as authority. And then towards about the last third of the purport, to enjoy his transcendental bliss, explaining the Supreme Lord, he expands into vijnanamaya, pranamaya, jnanamaya, and anamaya. In the field of activities, the living entity is considered to be the enjoyer, and different from him is the anandamaya. So there's in the purport, it describes anamaya, pranamaya, jnanamaya, vijnanamaya, and anandamaya. Now here, it describes that the anandamaya, that's actually Krishna, he's different from the living entity. This means that if the living entity decides to enjoy in dovetailing himself with the anandamaya, then he becomes perfect. This is the real picture of the Supreme Lord as the supreme knower of the field, and living entities as the subordinate knower, and the nature of the field of activities. One has to search for this truth in the Vedanta Sutra or Brahma Sutra. It is mentioned here that the codes of Brahma Sutra are very nicely arranged according to cause and effect. Some of the sutras or aphorisms are Navyad Asruti, Namasruti, Paratu Tatsruti. The first aphorism indicates the field of activities, the second indicates the living entity, and the third indicates the Supreme Lord, the summum bonum amongst all the manifestations of various entities. And then there was, so in the purport, Prabhupada explains, he quotes Taittiriya Upanishad and Katha Upanishad and Vedanta Sutra to show how the points are actually expanded more in more detail. Krishna's points are more expanded in more detail in these shastras. 6 and 7. Now he's going to give a brief summary of the field of activities. The five great elements. So he's given a very brief explanation. Now he's going to expand it some. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifest, the 10 senses, and the mind, the 5 sense objects. So those are the 24 elements of Sankhya philosophy that the material world is divided into. Then, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions, all these are considered in summary to be the field of activities. So text 6 is the elements, and when they react, the different reactions of those elements within the body give those other elements of the field, which are desire, hatred, happiness, distress. There's the 24 elements, and the different interaction of the 24 elements give these others. Seven are the qualities of the mind. The different qualities of the mind that come from the interactions with the other elements of the Mahatattva. Prabhupada explains at the end of the purport. The body is the representation of all these factors, and there are changes of the body, which are 6 in number. The body is born, it grows, it stays, it produces byproducts, then it begins to decay, and at the last stage, it vanishes. Therefore, the field is a non-permanent material thing. However, the Kshetrajna, the knower of the field, its proprietor, is different. So, I'm going to draw a picture over here that explains the relationship between all this knowledge And and our life. So it's something like, very simple. Here is the field of activities. And just like, at least in the United States, many houses, and I think it's like this in England, almost every house, at least in the suburbs, has a backyard. And in the backyard, that means there's some land, and there's usually some type of a fence or wall around it. So sometimes, the parents will put a child within that backyard and let him play in that backyard. And the child is limited to what he can do to the facilities that are within that backyard. And just like the living entity is limited to what he can do to simply the interactions of his body and his mind and his karma. Based on, and that is what his field of activities is. Just like an earthworm has a very particular body, and its field of activities based on his body is very limited. And there's no question of him reading any books, or even joining the kirtans, or watching television, or going to a feast and enjoying it. All he can do is crawl through the earth and go... And, you know, come out of his hole when it rains and then jump back in the hole. He has no other existence except the particular field of activities that's been created for him as his khetra, as his chetra, his field of activities according to his karma. Now, he's in that. Now, someone else, another living entity, he's actually the same size as this one, but his maybe his field of activity is a little bigger. And there's another one who has even a smaller field of activities. And then there's someone, some living entity who has a huge field of activities. Like a human being, a very intelligent human being. He has a very huge facility, just like a rich man's son. Has a backyard with so many toys in it. He's just playing in there and he thinks, this is so wonderful, look what I've done. Look at my field. Look at my backyard. I'm playing on the swings. I'm going back and forth. This is ecstasy. This is great happiness. I have a sandbox. I have a toy car. But actually, it's just one little foolish field of activities that has such a high wall around it that he can't see anything beyond that wall. So similarly, the living entity, according to the limitations of his body, which is awarded according to his karma, he cannot see anything beyond that field of activities. But, we can use in the example, if there is the parent, he will know, he or she will know, or the government officer, he knows what's going on in everyone's field of activities, every backyard. He looks in this backyard and sees what one person is doing. It's not that he interferes, but one child is playing maybe with a sandbox and he's the rich man's child, so he realizes he needs some other toy, so he throws in there some blocks. And the child starts playing with the blocks. So he's providing, ultimately it's his sanction that's providing all the elements of the field of activities. And he provides everyone enough that they can live satisfactorily. So to the earthworm, he's providing enough earth. And to the birds, he provides enough fruits and earthworms to eat. And other bugs. And to living entities, he provides this. And for, according to one's karma, one gets provided by this other kshatriya, the super soul, who knows everyone's field of activities. Now, but keep in mind that this field of activities is limited according to one's body. But the living entity, although he's identifying with his field of activities, actually has nothing at all to do with his field of activities. He's playing in there. And due to his ignorance, he's limited by his field of activities. But he's thinking, oh, this is everything, all in all. Now, Texts 8 through 12 is a continuation about Gyan, which is the fifth question. Because 8 through 12 describes how to get the process of actually getting Gyan. So if you want to adjust your sheet right now, on text 5 where it says Gyanam, what does it say? I mean, not text 5, number 5 in section A. What does it say there? The process of knowledge. It's also knowledge and the process of knowledge. That's what's been explained. Not only the process of knowledge, but knowledge, which was explained first, and now the process of knowledge is going to be described. Now, this process of knowledge is given from the point of view of Jnana Yoga more than Bhakti Yoga, although there are some elements in the process of knowledge that are only that are only meant for Bhakti Yogis, and there's some elements that are only meant for Jnana Yogis, but most of it is meant for both, but there is some emphasis on Jnana. Now, this is the process of knowledge. Now, what if someone follows the process of knowledge, what will he get? What will he get? He will get knowledge. And what knowledge will he get? Okay, he will get specifically?
Knowledge of the body, the soul, and the spirit.
Right. So that's knowledge. So we're putting the process of knowledge and knowledge as the answer to Arjuna's fifth question. So here is the process of knowledge. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amidst pleasure and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me. Now that, so the first 15 qualities that were named are qualities that are actually good for both devotees and jnanis. But this constant and unalloyed devotion to me is actually the quality of a pure devotee. Then, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people. Now those two add up to make it 17 qualities that are both for devotees and jnanis, and that constant unalloyed devotion to me, which is just for the devotees. And then the last two, of accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth, these are for jnanis. All these I declare to be knowledge, and beside this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. In the purport, right at the beginning. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity. But actually, this is the real process of knowledge. In the sandbox. But he may be learning something, but his learning is limited by the four walls of his field of activities. And since knowledge has already been defined as knowledge beyond the field of activities, because it has to do with knowledge of the soul different from the field of activities, and knowledge of the supersoul different from the field of activities. So therefore, the process of knowledge actually has nothing at all to do with the field of activities. This is the real process of knowledge, of attaining knowledge. It has nothing at all to do with the field of activities, although as Prabhupada says, that less intelligent man may misinterpret this being the interaction of the field of activities, but actually it is the system for getting out of the misidentification with the field of activities. It is the process of real knowledge. So if one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements, as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements. And the process of knowledge as described here is the means to get out of it. Okay. Are there any questions up to this point of how the chapter is progressing? Yes, Ringananda. That what? This is the actual process of knowledge, of developing knowledge. This is the process of gaining knowledge by developing these qualities, yes.
But the process is to develop these qualities? That all these qualities will be developed by following the process of knowledge, or they will give knowledge?
They give knowledge. This is the process by which one attains knowledge.
So one has to develop these qualities?
They're not just qualities. I'm not sure why you're saying they're just qualities. To be aware, like to be aware of the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. So that takes a conscious effort and conscious hearing. So it's not exactly a quality. Cleanliness is a quality. Cleanliness brings one to the mode of goodness, but cleanliness is also, it's part of a process. Steadiness, these are aspects of the mode of goodness. Simplicity, etc. Approaching a bona fide spiritual master. So if one follows this process, it's not approaching a bona fide spiritual master isn't a quality, but it's a part of a process. So if one adopts the elements of the process, then knowledge comes. More mantra.
In the sixth verse, it talks about the five great elements, false ego, diligence, and manifest in the mind. You're saying that this refers to the 24 elements.
Yes.
So five great elements is five. False ego is one, that's six. Intelligence is the seven. And manifest, eight. And ten senses is 18. And the mind is 19. And then the five sense objects makes it 24, up to 10. And then desire, hatred, that's everything else.
That's the interaction, comes from the interaction of all these other elements with the mind. You had a question, Chris?
Well, I just wanted to clarify my understanding. So this process of knowledge uses the material body in the correct way to reach the spiritual world.
That is the real use, that is the real fruit of the human body. Because we're using the example of it's the field of activities. The real fruit to be grown on the field of the human body is transcendental knowledge. So this is the proper use of it. And therefore, because it's a transcendental process, it is beyond the field of activities. It is not just therefore it isn't the interaction of the field of activities, even though less intelligent people may think it is. Especially because if one is just developing cleanliness, it's going to be the interaction of the field of activities. But cleanliness is part of the process of knowledge under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, with the goal of transcendental knowledge is not of the field of activities. Yeah.
So just to think about this kind of simple. 20 items, the Krishna says, I thus declare to be knowledge. And I was telling you that these are symptoms of knowledge.
We just went through this.
Yeah,
I just
didn't understand.
Huh?
I tried to understand.
This is the process of knowledge. He's declaring this to be the process of knowledge.
But what are the steps of the process?
Here's a general outline of it. The first and most important is that you have to accept a bona fide spiritual master. And then under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, then he gives you the practical application of the elements of the process of knowledge. As Prabhupada explains in the purport, this is actually the means to get out of the entanglement. because it's the process of knowledge that's referred to as knowledge.
This knowledge, the process of knowledge, is not generally found in the field.
It is not generally found in the field.
It is
never, the process of knowledge has nothing to do with the field of activities.
Yeah.
It has nothing at all to do with it. The perception of the evils of birth, death, old age, and disease, that's opposed to the playing in the field of activities. Freedom from the entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. Even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. Constant, unalloyed devotion to me. These have nothing to do with the field of activities whatsoever. Someone who's trapped in the mode of goodness may have some superficial non-violence or superficial cleanliness, but if one examines even those qualities, they have, from a transcendental point of view, they have nothing to do with the field of activities whatsoever. If we look at cleanliness inside and outside, it has nothing to do with the field of activities. This is the process of getting out of the field of activities, getting out of the misidentification with the body and the limitations of the field of activities for our knowledge. So therefore, at the end, this is the process of knowledge. And beside that, if someone is engaging in what he thinks is so-called knowledge, but it's not this, it's ignorance. He's looking through a microscope and he's just playing in the field of activities, although he's thinking, oh, I'm getting scientific knowledge. He's just within the boundary walls of his field of activities. Because knowledge means transcendental knowledge.
So it comes from outside.
Yes, it's descending. It's exactly the point.
It's using the field.
It's using the field. To do it, we have to use the field. We have to use the body. How would we not use the body? And if we don't use the body directly, we have to use the mind. But that's also part of the field of activities. And the intelligence, also part of the field of activities. No, they're right in the purport. And they're also explained in the Taittiriya Upanishad, the Katha Upanishad. Okay, but because it's a little bit off the field, if we have some time at the end, we can go into that. There are different realizations of the living entity within the field. And then there's one realization or two that are with outside the field of activities. That's the knowledge of the living entity different from the body and knowledge of the supersoul. So knowledge of the living entity different from the body is still within the field of activities. It's not out. You have to have knowledge of all three to get liberated. Okay, let's move on. So that was section C, Krishna's further answer to question 5 about what is jnanam. Now, Krishna is going to answer in 13 through 19, question 6, what is jnanam, or the object of knowledge? So we already know what the object of knowledge is. The object of knowledge is kshatragya, the two different kshatragyas. So one is following the process of knowledge to realize that he is a spirit soul, he's not his body, and Krishna is the supreme soul, the super soul, the paramatma in all bodies. So that comes out right now, that what is the object of knowledge? I shall now explain the knowable, that is jnanam, the knowable, which is the object of knowledge. Knowing which you will taste the eternal, Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. Purport. The Lord has explained the field of activities and the knower of the field. He has also explained the process of not knowing the knower of the field of activities. Now he begins to explain the knowable, first the soul and then the supersoul. By knowledge of the knower, both the soul and the supersoul, one can relish the nectar of life. And therefore, this over here, this description in this verse is considered by Srila Prabhupada and Baladeva Jibusan as the description of the soul, the object of knowledge as the soul. This is the prime object of knowledge. And then the rest of this section is dedicated to the ultimate object of knowledge, which is the Supasoul. Prabhupada explains at the end of the purport. Therefore, the description of Brahman mentioned in this verse is in relation to the individual soul. And when the word Brahman is applied to the living entity, it is to be understood that he is Vijnana Brahma as opposed to Ananda Brahma. Ananda Brahma is the supreme Brahman personality of Godhead. So now, in 14, to the end of the section, to 18 actually, there is a description of the Supasoul. Everywhere, even though the terms used are more Upanishadic style, and they talk about Brahman, by the end it is clear what is being talked about is a Supasoul. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way, the Supasoul exists. The Supasoul is the original source of all senses. Yet he is without senses. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature, and at the same time, he is the master of all the modes of material nature. The supreme truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, he is also near to all. So it's interesting to note that this section, Krishna said, I will now explain to you the Gyayam. I will now explain to you the knowable. And one of the terms in the third line of this is Avigyayam, which means unknowable. So the knowable, by definition, is unknowable. So what does that mean? That means by material processes, using the material senses, the Supasoul is unknowable, as is Brahman actually too. So one needs to hear from transcendental sources to know him. The material senses are useless to know. Although the Supasoul appears to be divided amongst all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. Now Krishna is closing in on the definition of the knowable. And if one examines the Sanskrit, he'll see that Prabhupada's putting in the Supasoul as the description of the Supasoul is actually the conclusion that Krishna reaches, and Prabhupada so kindly is doing this to make it easier for us to understand. Then in 17, although the Supasoul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. He is Bhuta Bhartri. That comes up later. And then, he is the source of light at all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge. And he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. Riddhe Savasya Vishtitam. He is situated in everyone's heart. The same Brahman and unknowable that has been described previously is in everyone's heart as the Supasoul. So he is thus knowable as the Supasoul. Okay. Thus, Krishna summarizes in text 19, thus the field of activities, the body, knowledge, and the knowable have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. Mad bhakti etad vigyaya. This is unknowable unless one is a devotee. If one is not a devotee, one will become confused by this and misunderstand. So does everyone understand those? The body, knowledge, and the knowable, which is the field of activities. Chetra, chetra gya, jnana, and gayam. Everyone understand those four?
Yes.
Okay. Now there's two more, which are the first two. Whoops, we've erased the first two on there. The first two are Prakriti and Purusha. Now Krishna is going to describe them. And that's the next to last section. But better save it to the end because we're already running late. Material nature and the living entities should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformations and the modes of matter are products of material nature. So the transformation... So now Krishna is going to discuss the union, Prakriti, Purusha, and how they combine. What is the nature of their combination? How the two kinds of Kshetragya, how are they combined together and what is their relationship? And that's Prakriti and Purusha. So all the transformations or changes in these things, this is the first thing that Krishna says, is just a product of the modes of material nature. The changes are just in the field of activities. Nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. So now, this is addressing that question that we've talked about many times about the doer. So the living entity is the one who is causing all his troubles through his illicit desire, and he's also causing his enjoyments through his illicit desires to play within the field of activities. But actually, the material nature, the prakriti, the kshetragya, working under the control of the modes of material nature, is actually enacting everything. The living entity is desiring and getting calmer, and then, in that sense, he's the doer, and then the modes of material nature are transforming the field for the living entity's suffering and enjoyment, all under the sanction of the real Purusha or the real Kshetragya, the Supersoul. The living entity in material nature, now here this verse is extremely important. This verse describes how the living entity who is Kshetragya, and here he's defined as Purusha, but actually he's Prakriti. How he gets trapped within the Kshetragya, the Kshetra, or the material nature. How he remains trapped or entangled in there. Purusha Prakriti Stohi. Here he's actually not Purusha. Purusha means the enjoyer. Purusha Prakriti Stohi. The Purusha, the one who is thinking himself as Purusha, who's situated within Prakriti, Bhunte Prakriti Jan Gunat. He's trying to enjoy those things that are created. Bhunte means enjoy, by the gunas or the modes of material nature within Prakriti. Karanam guna sangasya, because of that enjoying spirit, and that brings him in contact with the gunas, the modes of material nature. Because of that enjoying spirit, bhunte prakriti jan gunan, because of that attempt to enjoy of his, that brings him in contact with the modes, and therefore sada sad joni janmasu. He is forced to take birth and death, birth and death, birth and death, again and again in so many different modes of material nature. So that describes the phony Purusha. The one who thinks that he's the Purusha, trying to enjoy in his playground of material nature. But he's actually not the Purusha, and the problem is he thinks he's the Purusha. And he thinks that field of activities is his field for enjoyment. But actually it's the field for his suffering. Then in the next verse, the real Purusha is described. The real, the knower of all fields is described. Upadrashtanu mantacha bharta bhokta maheshvara paramatmeti chapyukto dehesmin purushapara. He is Purusha para. He is the supreme Kshetragya. He is the supreme Purusha. And he is the upadrashta. That means he is the, upa means above or near, and drashta means seer. So there is one seer who is the Purusha, and here is the Purusha para, the supreme Purusha, who is the near seer. He's sitting right next to the soul and also seeing everything. He is knowing all fields. Yet in this body there is another, a transcendental enjoyer, who is the Lord, the supreme proprietor, who exists as the overseer and permitter, and who is known as the Supersoul. So now the Lord is explaining the relationship of the Paramatma to the Jivatma. So it is the relationship between the two Kshetragyas. One is trying to be Purusha and the other is permitting him to be Purusha. One who understands this philosophy concerning material nature, the living entity, and the interaction of the modes of nature, or the Kshetragya, or the Prakriti, or the Gunas, is sure to attain liberation. He will not take birth here again, regardless of his present position. Some perceive the Supersoul within themselves through meditation, others through the cultivation of knowledge, and still others through working without fruit of desires. So the Supersoul is the Gyayam, the object of knowledge. He is the Purusha. He is the object of knowledge. And here are three different ways to attain him. Do they sound familiar? Because we discussed them so much in the first six chapters. But the idea is that through yoga or dhyana or meditation, or through jnanam, the cultivation of knowledge, or working without fruit of desires, karma yoga or nishkam karma yoga, the only goal to actually be obtained is the Supersoul, confirmed by the bell. So Arjuna would ask now, if one can't meditate or be a jnani, what can he do? And 26, again, there are those who, not conversant in spiritual knowledge, begin to worship the Supreme Person upon hearing about him from others. Because of their tendency to hear from authorities, they also transcend the path of birth and death. They transcend, why? Because they hear with faith. That's what it means to hear from authorities. They hear with faith and without any material desires. And therefore, just by that process of hearing, with faith, without material desires, they will attain liberation. They will transcend the path of birth and death. Mrityam shruti parayana. They transcend death because of their affection or tendency to hear. Now, the final section, is the Lord explains how to separate the Kshetra and the Kshetragya, or the consciousness needed. O chief of the Bharatas, know that whatever you see in existence, both moving and non-moving, is only a combination of the field of activities and the knower of the field. So this is going to summarize everything that's needed to the consciousness that's needed to transcend thinking of oneself, identifying with his playground or the field of activities. One who sees the Supersoul accompanying the individual soul in all bodies, and who understands that neither the soul nor the Supersoul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, he actually sees. So that the living entity is different from the body, and here that the Supersoul is different from the soul. One who sees the Supersoul equally present everywhere in every living being does not degrade himself by his mind. Thus he approaches the transcendental destination. One who can see that all activities are performed by the body, which is creative material nature, and sees that the self does nothing, actually sees. When a sensible man ceases to see different identities due to different material bodies, and he sees how beings are expanded everywhere, he attains to the Brahman conception. So when one sees, actually, that when you're looking around and you're seeing so many different material bodies, and you cease to see them as their field of activities, as their backyards, as their playgrounds, but you see them for what they are, the Kshetragya, the soul, the Prakriti who thinks that he's Purusha within the material body, eternal spirit soul, then that is actually Brahman vision. That is the Brahman conception. Those with the vision of eternity can see that the imperishable soul is transcendental, eternal, and beyond the modes of nature. Despite contact with the material body, O Arjuna, the soul neither does anything nor is entangled. The sky, here's an example, due to its subtle nature, does not mix with anything, although it is all-pervading. Similarly, the soul situated in Brahman, vision, does not mix with the body, although situated in that body. O son of Bharata, as the sun alone illuminates all this universe, so does the living entity, one within the body, illuminate the entire body by consciousness. So Krishna, in the last few verses, is giving examples to help us understand. Those, here's the summary, those who see with the eyes of knowledge the difference between the body and the nor of the body, and can also understand the process of liberation from bondage and material nature, attain to the supreme goal. Now, what is the title of this chapter? Okay, now you understand the title. What is nature? What is enjoyer? And what is which ones are which? What is nature, which is enjoyer, and which is consciousness? What is nature? In the term, in these questions. Prakriti or Kshetragya? No, no, not the living entity. Don't misidentify the living entity with the Kshetra. Excuse me. Nature, okay. Consciousness is the living entity. The enjoyer? The super soul. And nature? Prakriti. Right, right, it's true. And also there's two natures. There's a superior nature and an inferior nature. Tattvastu Shakti and Maya Shakti. The living entity is a phony enjoyer. Because Krishna has said in the end of the fifth chapter, Bhoktaram Jagatapasam, I am the enjoyer. The bogus Purusha is the living entity. But the real Purusha is Krishna. He is Purushottam. He is Purusha Para. So here's the purport. The purport of the 13th chapter is that one should know the distinction between the body, the owner of the body, and the supersoul. One should recognize the process of liberation as described in 8 through 12. Then one could go on to the supreme destination. A faithful person should at first have some good association to hear of God, and thus gradually become enlightened. If one accepts a spiritual...